I am Michael Lieberman from Federal Defender Services of Wisconsin, and I represent appellant Carlos Lewis before this court, as I did in the district court. Your Honors, this case presents two issues. One is whether there was a violation of the Speedy Trial Act, and the second is the sufficiency of the evidence. I want to start briefly, if I could, with the Speedy Trial Act issue. Admittedly, I think the big issue with regard to the Speedy Trial Act is whether I waived it by not filing a motion to dismiss in the district court. So let me get right to that. I concede wholeheartedly that I did not ever utter the words dismiss the indictment. I never filed a motion to dismiss. That said, given the current state of the law at that time, because the Supreme Court had not decided the Bloat case, we'd still be in the same position. The court would have denied the motion. The court would have had no choice but to deny the motion, and the trial would have occurred as it did. So I would say there's really no harm in the fact that no motion to dismiss was filed. More importantly,
except that you know, of course, our circuit has held that you have to make that. And do you have any authority for your argument that allows us to depart under the circumstances you described, that, you know, had Bloat been there, it wouldn't have made any difference? Or had any authority existed?
I don't, Your Honor, but I think it's clear that had I made the motion, I would still be standing here today making the exact same argument on, I think, the same record, because the motion would have been denied and trial would have gone forward. And there would have been a verdict, and then Bloat would have been decided. So this is not a case where I intentionally withheld filing the motion so that trial could go on and I could spring this later. This was the law didn't allow the motion to be made, and as soon as the law allowed the motion to be made, I made it 2 days later. I also think, if the court reviews the record, even though I didn't make a motion to dismiss, it is abundantly clear that I made the government and the court aware of my position that the Speedy Trial Act had been violated. Made clear at the hearing on November 23rd of 2009 that I was not waiving any speedy trial rights. I made clear that because of the delay in giving the DNA evidence, it would be a further speedy trial violation. And in fact, the government at that hearing, and this is on page 12 of the transcript of the November 23rd, 2009 hearing, at the end of the hearing, Ms. Rumbelow notes, quote, "I do think that the filing of this motion in limine also will toll the Speedy Trial Act. I just want this to be part of the record because I'm sure it will be an issue if there is an appeal in this case." So even the government is acknowledging at the time that everybody in the courtroom knows that we're talking about whether there's a Speedy Trial Act violation.
Yeah, but both the statute and the case law require a motion to dismiss the indictment, and I think that sort of ends it.
Okay, then I will move briefly to the sufficiency claim.
I mean, I understand that you feel it would have been a frivolous motion under then, you know, prevailing law, but
if the court rules that a motion is required, I didn't file a motion, and I agree that that would end the issue.
The court has ruled for many years that a motion is required.
Then I want to move quickly to the sufficiency issue. This is a case where Mr. Lewis was charged with possessing a gun. There's nobody said they ever saw him with a gun. Nobody said he alluded to a gun. The gun that they did ultimately find on the roof of a building didn't have his fingerprints on it. There's no evidence that his DNA was on that gun. The only evidence that links him at all to the area where that gun is found is a witness who the government brought out during trial, couldn't see very well, who from 60 yards away said he saw Mr. Lewis throw a bag. Didn't say he saw him throw a gun. He said he saw him throw a bag. No bag was found. A gun was found on top of a building past which Mr. Lewis ran. That's the evidence.
Yeah, but the jury put two and two together. Whatever the witness saw, there was only one object on the roof, and that object was a loaded gun.
Well, the witness said he saw him throw a bag or something that fluttered. The officer who was chasing Mr. Lewis said he saw him throw his red baseball cap, which from 60 yards away for a witness who can't see very well would certainly flutter like a bag. Nobody said he saw him throw a gun on the roof. The cab driver didn't see a gun in his hand. The officer who chased him didn't see a gun in his hand. Nobody saw a gun in his hand, and there was no physical evidence tying him to the gun. So, unless the court has any other questions, that's my argument. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Lieberman. And we have Ms. Rumbelow. Gosh, we haven't seen you in a while.
I've been here, Your Honor. You just haven't been on my panel. Good morning. Good morning. I think, Judge Rovner, you are correct. The jury did put two and two together. I mean, we have the cab driver. I mean, Mr. Lewis, on this morning in August, threatened the cab driver. He said, "I have something for you." He's threatening him over $2.75, this dispute in this cab fare. And the cab driver felt that this threat, the tone of the threat, was so real that he waved down a police officer. And at first, Sergeant Paulson just thought that the cab driver was just kind of waving to him, so he didn't approach him. And then he did. And then we also have the fact that the defendant, as he was fleeing, dropped first his very visible marker. And the very visible marker was the red hat. He threw that to the ground. And Sergeant Paulson even saw him do that. But then as the defendant rounded the corner of this Dream Bikes building, I'm sure what was going through the defendant's mind at the time was, aha, the law enforcement officer chasing me can't see me. This is the time that I'm going to throw my gun on the rooftop. But little did he know that this Einstein Bagel employee, Mr. Lorenz, would be out on a cigarette break. Mr. Lorenz never even told the officers in August, "I know what it was that he threw on the roof." He never pretended he knew what it was.
Kind of like Mr. Magoo, isn't he?
Yeah, he just said, and he kept using it.
Pretty alert, Mr. Magoo.
He was alert. He was smoking a cigarette, but he couldn't see exactly what item it was. But in August of 2009, he told the responding officers it was an African-American male wearing dark clothing, running very quickly, and he chucked something on the roof. And he repeated the term chucked at trial, which, you know, I pointed out the inconsistencies of his statements. And again, the jury's just like, nobody's going to take the time to chuck a fluttering bag on the rooftop. They used their common sense. The circumstantial evidence is, again, when you add everything together, we don't have just the threat. We don't have just the red cap. We have all of it together, his flight. The jury could consider his flight as evidence of guilt. And again, Officer Jody Nelson, she didn't testify. Of course she didn't know how long the gun had been on the rooftop, but the photos were introduced in evidence. The gun was not rusty. Officer Nelson testified that the only thing she saw on the rooftop among the pebbles and the little stones was this gun. So I do think, again, that the jury correctly listened to the instruction to apply their common sense, and they chose the right verdict by finding the defendant guilty. There was sufficient evidence, and as Judge Robner pointed out, both the statute and case law foreclosed Mr. Lieberman's argument under the Speedy Trial Act. He had to file a motion to dismiss, period. It's waiver. Thank you.
It wasn't waived.
The statute says waiver.
I don't fault counsel for not making the motion because it was a foregone conclusion it was going to be denied. But had there been a motion, and it would have been denied, and we would have disagreed with it and said there was a Speedy Trial Act violation, the remedy would be, I would think, just a remand to the district court to decide whether the dismissal would be with or without prejudice. And here it would be, I would think, without prejudice because it was a very minor.
Right. But that's why the statute requires the filing of the motion pre-indictment, because we don't want jeopardy to attach. Pre-trial. I misspoke. Pre-trial. But the statute itself uses the term waiver. If you don't file it pre-trial, it's waiver, because then the district court could find that there has been a violation and that the move to dismiss the indictment without prejudice, so then the government could, you know, respond accordingly, either by re-indictment or dismissal of the case on its own. So you can't just try to sandbag the government post-trial. And I also want to remind the court that bloat, the Supreme Court had granted the petition for cert in bloat months before Mr. Lewis was sentenced. It had been briefed, it had been argued, and it had been decided. And then still it wasn't until 2 days after sentencing in this case that Mr. Lieberman raised the issue. And I do understand, too, at the time, it would have been frivolous to file it, but bloat was out there. It was floating, the issue, people. But had he filed it, frivolous or not, it would have preserved the issue, too. Then we wouldn't be in the point of waiver. So, thank you.
You want to add anything, Mr. Lieberman? All right. Well, I thank everyone for their arguments.